Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. One letter writer to American Dissident Voices objected to my article on U.S. meddling in Ukraine, the new Cold War, calling it, quote, an insult to true nationalists on the streets, close quote. I suggested in my program that the Ukrainian patriots who've been tempted to ally themselves with the regime in Washington and the EU, or who acted in a way that advanced the EU-US agenda, would eventually come to deeply regret those decisions. I also stated that, despite my reservations about Putin and the new Russia, that nation has positioned itself in opposition to the world plantation being set up by the Jewish elite and its U.S. military bully boys. I suggested that it is not in the interest of any white nation, Ukraine included, to support Washington's side in this emerging conflict. I understand that passions are running high in Ukraine right now. People are dying in the streets. Well-armed snipers, funded by who knows who, kill policemen and protesters alike. Armies are marching, and deep, deep historical wounds resulting from mass murder on a monumental scale cannot be ignored. The letter writer said that, quote, nationalists should support nationalists, close quote. To that I say yes. But add that nationalists should, above all other things, be racial nationalists, not petty nationalists, white peoples mired in disputes with neighboring white nations. Our enemies and competitors see us, Russians and Americans and Ukrainians and Frenchmen and all the rest, as one to be defeated and slaughtered, that is. Unless we see ourselves as one, they are likely to succeed. Given the perilous position of our race today, the settling of historic scores between white nationalities should be low, vanishingly low, on our scale of values. I see a strain of petty nationalism in Putin's Russia, and I also see it in Svoboda, and right sector in Ukraine. Russia refusing to recognize the horrors of the Holodomor, the mass starvation imposed by mostly Jewish Bolsheviks on Ukrainians because they resisted Soviet communism, is an example of petty nationalism. Just like ignorant Americans don't dare doubt that World War II was a good war, with America on the side of the angels and the Axis powers on the side of quote-unquote evil. So also many ignorant Russians, even Russians who don't support communism, cannot abandon their my country right or wrong mentality. These Russians can't imagine World War II as anything except the quote-unquote great patriotic war. Just like unthinking Americans lap up the propaganda that the war on terror is a righteous response by our troops to Arab terrorism, ignoring the atrocities against innocents our soldiers are encouraged to commit, and which drive so many of them to suicide, and ignoring the fact that this war on terror is a creation of the Jewish neocons, so also many unthinking Russians want to sanitize their decades-long subservience to the architects of the intentional mass famines that killed millions. But I also see some recognition of the real struggle for global white survival among leading elements in Russia, something that one cannot even imagine occurring in America or Western Europe today. Even before the fall of communism, Leonid Brezhnev famously told Margaret Thatcher at an East-West summit in 1980 that their actions that day would determine the fate of our race, saying, quote, "The only question is whether the white race will survive," close quote. The only question. More recently, in 2008, Dmitry Rogozin, now Russia's deputy prime minister and then ambassador to NATO, said, quote, "There is an enormous distance between Europe and the Third World. There is a new civilization emerging in the Third World that thinks that the white Northern Hemisphere has always oppressed it and must therefore fall at its feet now. This is very serious. If the Northern civilization wants to protect itself, it must be united. America, the European Union, and Russia. If they are not together, they will be defeated one by one." Close quote. Rogozin sees America and the EU with rose-colored glasses, perhaps, but any leader's concern for white civilization or white anything would result in instant political suicide in the West, and not, I assure you, elevation to the position of deputy prime minister. Just 3 weeks ago, a Russian MP from the ruling United Russia Party spoke on the floor of the regional parliament in Kaliningrad, saying openly that Jews had ruined his country twice, in the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution and in the 1991 rape of the Russian economy by the Jewish oligarchs. Clearly, as far as awareness of our plight and freedom of speech go, things are very different in Russia and in Ukraine and in Eastern Europe generally than they are in occupied America. Very different indeed. In Ukraine, I see real racial nationalism in some of the statements of the nationalist parties. I see recognition of the dominant Jewish role in the mass murders that decimated their people. I see some clear proclamations that membership in a nation is defined by blood, not geography or language. That's healthy. That's realistic. That gives me hope that out of the current chaos might come someday a real racial national revolution there. But some of these nationalists are far more focused on cutting Ukraine's ties with Russia than they are with anything else. I see some of them explicitly calling for integration into the West via the European Union, and even cooperation with NATO. I see such short-sighted strategies as petty nationalist in the extreme. What everyone involved, whatever his nationality, needs to know is this. The regime in Washington is now an instrumentality of the Jewish power structure. That power structure has declared war on our race. Washington exercises its influence around the globe to squash all national resistance to the hegemony of Israel and of Jewish finance. In the service of that power structure, Washington's policies are geared to exterminating its own founding race, limiting its births, transferring its wealth, and replacing it with cheap alien labor from the Third World. Whatever weakens that power structure is good for our race, and whatever strengthens that power structure also strengthens its ability to commit genocide against us. Furthermore, the corrupt regime in Washington has an established pattern of betraying its allies whenever it is expedient to do so. In the 1980s, both Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were lauded by the Washington regime and supplied with millions in arms and aid. A few decades later, the Washington regime arranged to have these former allies hunted down and killed. In 2009, Obama shook Muammar Gaddafi's hand and praised his reforms, just 2 years before facilitating his gruesome murder. So to my Ukrainian friends and my Russian friends, settle your differences as brothers, not enemies. Above all, do not trust the unspeakable monster in Washington. Whatever it says, whatever it promises, do not trust it. You may pay with your lives and the lives of your loved ones if you do. America is no longer a bulwark of freedom and anti-communism. Whatever America seemed to be 60 years ago, it is not today. It is the opposite today. whenever you have the chance to influence events, shift our world's balance of power eastward, away from Washington, away from Brussels, eastward where our people, corrupt and imperfect and petty nationalist as they may be, still rule themselves. American Dissident Voices. Another letter writer told me, quote, "Mr. Strom, you seem very anti-Christian. I happen to be a white nationalist and a Catholic. What about Christians who are white nationalists? I've been listening to American Dissident Voices since I was 13. I've considered people like you, David Duke, and the dearly departed William Pierce, as teachers. I am very aware of what is happening to our people. I try not to get into frivolous debates about what religion is right for the white race. I do, however, consider churches in general to be morally corrupted now. But churches are an institution, like schools. And like schools, they have been corrupted by those who at this very moment are trying to X us out of history and erase us from this universe. The corruption, in my opinion, is reversible. I've met priests and ministers who are quite anti-Semitic. They were also highly against miscegenation. I remember talking to the father of my church a while back, and I asked him what he thought about miscegenation, and he told me that it was a sin against nature and God. He also told me that it is hard to be a church leader with the ideas that he has. He said that the church had changed to such a point that he wished he had been born in any century that wasn't the 20th century. Thank you, Mr. Strom, and keep fighting the good fight." Close quote. To that I reply, I salute your priest for his courage and intelligence and racial loyalty. The three major problems with the creed he serves, though, are these. One, it does not explicitly state the racial principles he so nobly expressed. They are, if anything, denied by his creed. Two, Christianity is not our creed. Its origin is almost entirely Semitic, and it preaches universalism, the idea that there is one salvation and one universal morality for all races, and that who we really are is not defined by biology and evolution and genetics, but by whether or not we believe in a cobbled-together collection of primitive Hebrew holy books whose content is provably untrue and preposterously ahistorical and anti-scientific on so many points it would take 100 of these radio programs just to point them out. Your priest is a courageous and honorable man, and I salute him. But his truthfulness and his righteousness are in spite of his creed, not because of it. That makes him all the more courageous, I admit. But our people need more than just a few rebel priests and ministers. We need a whole new society constructed from its very foundations, including its religious and moral foundations, for the purpose of preserving and advancing the life of our race. I consider myself to be your kinsman and ally, regardless of differences in religious beliefs or practices. But I will continue to help my people see that they need a new belief system, one which puts racial survival and upward evolution first in our scale of values, and one based upon scientifically ascertained realities of our universe, discovered by the questing minds of European man over the centuries, which prove, beyond any reasonable doubt, that the Semitic scriptures are both alien and false. You're listening to American Dissident Voices. Here comes the heavy steel hammer. I said I'd use it last week to debunk the notion, repeated on some supposedly pro-white forums, but having its origin in an article published by a Jewish-operated smear sheet, the idea that Dr. William Pierce created his religion cosmotheism as a quote-unquote tax dodge and did not take its tenets seriously. I worked with William Pierce for 20 years. For most of those years, I had almost daily conversations with him. His spiritual ideas, which he expressed in cosmotheism, were the most important motivation for everything he did during the last quarter century of his life. When I first discovered Dr. Pierce and the National Alliance in 1982, one of the very first things he asked me to do was to take home several cassette recordings of speeches he had made in the 1976-77 time frame and listen to them carefully, which I did. Most of those recordings had cosmotheist themes and began with the cosmotheist affirmation. The very next year, 1983, Dr. Pierce published the first cosmotheist booklet, The Path. When Dr. Pierce started building his community on the hill in the Appalachian Mountains of West Virginia, he invited the editor of the local newspaper to come visit him and see for himself what his efforts were all about. I was there, as I wrote in I Remember Dr. Pierce, quote, "One reason Dr. Pierce was glad we were there was his wish that we would constitute an audience for a discussion of cosmotheism he had scheduled for the benefit of the editor of the local paper, the Pocahontas Times. The editor, a man named William McNeil, had heard the media claims that cosmotheism was nothing but a tax dodge and wanted to see for himself. Dr. Pierce, McNeil, a guest brought by McNeil, my wife, and I sat in the gathering twilight on folding chairs in the dusty, unfinished upper floor of the new office building and listened to recorded excerpts from Bernard Shaw's Man and Superman, after which Dr. Pierce told the story of how the play, along with Nietzsche's philosophy, had influenced the development of his religion. I think McNeil was expecting a somewhat slicker-than-average bigoted bumpkin with overtones of con man and imperial lizard. What he got was closer to a living Pythagoras." Close quote. Dr. Robert S. Griffin spent many weeks with William Pierce, trying as best he could to understand his ideas and motivations as he was writing his 2001 biography, The Fame of a Dead Man's Deeds. Dr. Pierce particularly directed Dr. Griffin's attention to Shaw's play and to his own cosmotheist works. In fact, Dr. Pierce even stated that the proto-cosmotheist ideas in Man and Superman influenced him as early as 1955, long before his association with George Lincoln Rockwell and radical racial politics. He told Griffin, quote, "One of the things that helped me find direction was a play that I first came upon at Caltech back in 1955 or so, Man and Superman. Act 3 of the play was the one that really struck me. It expressed the idea that man shouldn't hold himself back. He should completely use himself up in service to the life force. I bought a set of phonograph records that had just that act in it. As I remember, it had Charles Laughton, Charles Boyer, Agnes Moorehead, and Cedric Hardwick. It was well done. Don Juan's expositions were what resonated with me. I listened to that set of records over and over and let it really sink in. The idea of an evolutionary universe hit me as being true, with an evolution toward higher and higher states of self-consciousness, and the philosopher's brain being the most highly developed tool for the cosmos coming to know itself. I felt I understood what Shaw meant. Over time, I have elaborated upon this idea. I came to call it cosmotheism and discussed it in a series of talks I gave in the 1970s. Close quote. As I wrote last week, Dr. Pierce's writings from the 1970s onward are filled with references to, as he saw it, the absolute necessity for a new spirituality among the leaders of our people. These same religious and philosophical ideals are integral to the National Alliance Membership Handbook, which he wrote in the 1990s. and William Pierce doubtlessly sacrificed financial support he would otherwise have received by remaining steadfast to these religious ideals. Another man who worked closely with William Pierce for decades is the writer James Harding, who said, quote, "Cosmotheism is what William Pierce believed in, deep in his heart and deep in his mind. It was in no sense a tax dodge or a fantasy. It was William Pierce's perception of the ultimate reality of the universe." Close quote. A few days before his death, when he knew his life was nearing its end, I and others were present at the hospital when Dr. Pierce remarked that he hadn't had enough time to, quote, "do what needs to be done," close quote. And he defined what needs to be done as building an organization, quote, "more like a holy order than a political group," close quote, with the purpose of that organization being the bringing forth of a higher type of man on this planet. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the New National Alliance membership organization, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. Please write to us at National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you of the words of Richard Berkeley Cotton. Freedom is not free. Free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and